would have been fine.
What I'm saying to you now is that let's not panic and let's just slow it down.
I wasn't panicking.
I think I was. I think I was a little bit. Is there a reason that manic rhymes with panic?
good question.
I just recognized that right now. You're a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
Which leads me to my next question. Can you get me some pills? Just ibuprofens. Nothing fancy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. At the drugstore.
Okay, good. On your way home is what I'm saying.
Okay. Thanks.
Hello and welcome to episode 272 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam with authority.
Back in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah, because I was away.
So, all those times, the last couple of weeks when you were saying Adam in Vancouver, you were lying.
Yeah, I don't really know how this whole thing works, but Yeah, I would have been away for spring break.
Where'd you go? Oh, don't tell me. I can't think of it now. Fort Lauderdale.
Close.
Okay.
Florida.
Oh.
Orlando. And that we did go to on a cruise, but we didn't leave out of Fort Lauderdale. We left out of Cape Canaveral, I think is what it is. No, is it? Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
Did you go to outer space?
No, not. Is it Cape Canaveral? It's something like that. Fort Canaveral. It's another one of the cruise ports down in Florida.
Cape Cod.
No, it's definitely not that. That's Boston, isn't it?
Cape of Good Hope.
Is it not called Cape Canaveral? No.
Cape Crusader.
None of those things. But we went on a Caribbean cruise for a week, and then we went to Disney World for a week. That was
right. That
was our 2 weeks. And since I've started working full time, like after graduating and becoming a world renowned physiotherapist, never taken 2 weeks off in my entire career. So consecutive, never taken 2 weeks consecutive time off. So this was a big deal. Like, having two consecutive weeks off. It's not that I wasn't allowed or I couldn't have. It's the way it works with my schedule. It's very hard to do that. And so, by choice, I've never done it. And this year decided that, yeah, let's do this. We're going to do the cruise first. We booked that. And then we thought we're already in Florida. So let's just take an extra week and then do Disney World because the kids are at the right age for it. So probably won't get back to Florida anytime soon. So just, thought it would be a good opportunity to do it. So that's what we did. Yeah.
Were you eaten by a shark?
Well, I hope not.
You don't know yet because you haven't gone.
We're pre-recording. Yeah, we're pre-recording.
This should explain the last couple episodes. Last week was a little bit shorter than normal, which, P.S., you're welcome. and this week probably be the same because we had to record a bunch so Adam could gallivant all around Cape Cod.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So probably not eaten by a shark.
Hopefully not.
Shark did selfie, maybe?
It'd be very odd if I was, and this is coming out. Now, if I get eaten by a shark, still publish this podcast because... the world will blame you for
this.
For...
will be the very definition of too soon.
But I'm saying right now, please publish this because I feel like the world should know.
I'm saying in terms of ratings, please get eaten by a shark during a selfie. If you're taking a selfie and you get bit in the face by a shark, that will be awesome.
Yeah. No, I...
For
I,
us, not for you. It'll probably sting.
We were about to book the Hammer Shark excursion in Mexico, but now we're not going to. Now after you said this, I'm not booking it now. Yeah.
Right. I think the hammerhead sharks are the least dangerous thing in Mexico.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. If you get to swim with El Chapo, that would probably be a little bit more dicey.
Okay.
Although, that would be a big tourist thing.
Oh, wouldn't it? I think so.
Like, hey, you can swim with El Chapo. Special guest, Sean Penn. There you go. See, that's too late. That one's not even relevant anymore. We've moved on to something that Lady Gaga said, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I had a question about Florida, but now I forget.
Okay, well, I'll tell you on the next episode. I'm going to bring a camera. I'm going to shoot some photos. On this side of the vacation, even though I'm now back, I don't know how many photos I'm going to take. I suspect a lot less than I may have done on previous vacations.
Off topic. If I were you, I would buy a sticker that of a guy, like just of a hand giving the middle finger.
A sticker of the hand giving the middle finger. And where would I place the sticker?
I would put that on the top of my head, if I were you, and not wear sunscreen for the entire time.
Oh, wow.
So that when you're walking around back home and someone points and looks at you, hey, look at his sunburn, you can just duck your head down and show him the finger part.
Okay.
The sticker will be gone. It'll just be tanned into your head.
Okay, I'll take that under advisement.
Yeah, that would be awesome at work too.
For sure it would.
When you come back.
I have a topic that I wanted to bring up on the podcast this week.
Listen, you're not going to do that though, are you?
What?
The middle finger thing.
No, I'm not going to do that. I'm a nice guy. I'm not like you.
Oh, no, I'm... yeah, okay, fair enough, but... I don't know. I think I got too excited about my own idea and for a second thought you were considering it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't considering it.
All right. Okay.
Gear talk. I've got some gear.
If you do buy that sticker,
okay,
click through our site and get it on Amazon.
Or if you are going to buy the next item that I'm going to talk about, you can click through Amazon.
I wanted to get Amazon out of the way and also the middle finger sticker and then get into the gear stuff. Let's get some gear talk. Go.
Okay, I just was reading, like, our clinic, our physiotherapy clinic, we get Photogr, which magazine is the biggest one, Photography, oh man, oh, I'm drawing a blank, the name of the magazine. Anyways, I was reading a photography magazine.
American Photographer?
No, it's a big one. Anyways, I'll have to look it up at work and you can stay tuned for that. A photography magazine, and I was just kind of, you know, flipping through, and of course there's ads and articles, and they always have a gear section, like, you know, I guess latest and greatest gear. And so I came across the fact that there's a new Canon 430EX, the EX3 now.
Right.
So have you seen this?
No.
It is awesome. Okay. So based on the reviews, I'm just looking on B&H now. It is awesome in the fact that it is $259 right now.
Okay, listen, before you go on though.
Yeah.
I don't think we're allowed to buy from B&H right now.
We're not.
Photographers aren't.
Why?
Word around the campfires are being jerks.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, so, I'm gonna guess that the price is similar elsewhere. So I'm just getting
probably $5 more, but
I was getting a quick price check, but it's $200.
Oh, I still do that. I still like their website. I'm happy to use them. And then go buy at a brick and mortar store. That's how the script has flipped, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, now this new flash has the built-in wireless triggering system. Okay, mm-hmm. So right off the bat, $259. Like, this is cheaper than the 430 EX2 still sells for on Craigslist half the time. Okay, right. So you got
by
the
geniuses.
It's
though.
Got the RT, so the radio triggering capabilities with all the ETTL functioning and blah blah blah, all the stuff on top of it. Massive upgrade to the previous 430 EX2 model is that it can serve as master or slave as well, which mm-hmm. is awesome, because one of the big drawbacks to the ones that I have, the EX2s, is you can't use them as a master. They're only slave flashes. So
you need a 580.
or you need a trigger to go on your camera or whatever else. So it requires you to have,
right. But if you have a 580 though,
then you can do it. Yeah. You need
that works as a stabilizer.
Exactly. So now you don't need the 580. So that, and again, the 580 was, you know, at the time was twice the price of the 430. So now and I guess this is their hand that they've been forced to play based on the fact that like companies like Yongnuo are out there and they're selling a model of a flash that, like you say, can do all these things at a low price. Well, now it's forced Canon to kind of get into that market of having all these functionalities, but being at an affordable price. So this is like heavy on pro features and definitely a prosumer price. So I am thrilled that this is, because we talked about a few weeks back about like, is this good what Yongnuo is doing? Well, clearly it is, because now look at what Canon's doing.
That is good. That now, does the Yongnuo, do they have a radio trigger flash?
I believe they do, yeah.
Like the exact same as the 430.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, it's comparable, yeah.
Price-wise?
I want to say it's around $200.
Okay.
So it's still cheap, but I mean, if that's the price difference, I'm buying the Canon one at $400 versus $200. Now I'm buying the Yongnuo. So it's a complete game changer in that they've gotten into the market. And if you're someone who doesn't have wireless triggers, well, now you don't need them. You've just skipped that step.
I would love to skip that step for a few different reasons besides actually purchasing them. I would like to not charge batteries for them.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm assuming, maybe power consumption got better anyway, improved, but all things being equal, you're probably going to get fewer pops out of that flash simply because you're powering the radio triggers as well that are built in.
Probably, but now,
in theory.
But now batteries have gotten so unbelievably fantastic that when you compare our flashes to the pops that you're going to get out of probably these flashes, I bet you they're more efficient and it's probably a break-even scenario.
Yeah, but even if it's not, even if you're getting fewer pops, I'm still doing it just for the sheer convenience of it.
Yeah, less gear, less stuff.
Yeah, I hate carrying around because I have three receivers and one trigger, and I hate carrying. I would love for it all to be built in, even if it's not ETTL, which this one I think is.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, even if it was just a simple radio trigger, just a trigger, that's it. That'd be great because it's one less thing, four less things for me to lose.
Right.
But I have three receivers that each take two AA batteries. Well, that's six batteries I have to keep charged. I don't want to do that. And then the transmitter has some sort of, you know, special watch battery, which isn't hard to find. It isn't tremendously expensive, but you don't always have them kicking around. Now, I do. I have a couple of spares because the last thing you want on a shoot is for that special battery to go down. If you're at a client's office and you're shooting and all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, you're down two AA batteries, as unprofessional as it is, you can dig into their desk and get a couple more probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I usually ask them to do it for me.
And the other thing is too, it's got, you know, the ability of the auto focus assist beam with quite a nice range on it. So it's like 13 feet. Mm-hmm. It's got tons of customized ability. Is that a word? 10 custom functions, 8 personal functions available for dialing in your specific settings. So, I mean, these are pro functions in a crazy inexpensive flash. I can't believe that this is a $260 flash. And by all accounts in the reviews that I'm seeing it's very well liked. On B&H, they've got an overall rating of 4.8 out of 5 based on the 40 odd reviews that are in there. So that unbelievable, like that's to me, that's the difference now with and kudos to Yongnuo, because again they forced them to kind of get into this market.
If my son takes a hammer to my 580EX2,
yeah,
which at this point is a 50-50, it's a coin toss,
yeah,
that he does that, I will likely replace it with this one you just described based on your description alone.
Well, I am buying one of these and I don't even need it.
The camera itself has to have a radio trigger in it as well, correct?
I would assume so. So I don't know. I don't know model of camera wise which one you would need in order for this to work. Like which upgraded models have the capabilities? I can't imagine. Like I'm pretty sure that the ones we have would not. But right. I'm gonna assume that all the forthcoming cameras will have it. At some point, like I say, I don't have a camera for it yet. At some point, I will buy this flash. Because this simplifies a lot of things and I want that functionality, but yeah, it won't be until, I have a camera that suits this.
Awesome. Me too.
Yeah.
I like where it's headed.
Me too.
This is the kind of technology I can get on board with versus the megapixel arrays or the crazy, crazy high ISO arrays. This is the kind of technology where it's making my life better and simple that I can get on board with.
Well, and what just happened, like how long ago was it that the 600, like essentially the 580, the flagship Canon flash came out, like the one that has the radio triggering built in, like is that 2 years old now?
Possibly.
But that flash was a ballpark $500 flash?
Oh, at least. I think
it came out higher than that $600 flash?
Well, I think it was called it was a Canon 600 EX, and I think 600 was the MSRP.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's an expensive piece of. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to output more light.
Yeah, but still,
but the kicker is, yeah, with the ISOs going higher and higher, which I'm against anyway. But the ancillary effect on that, don't know if that's how you say it, but it sounded cool. Is that you don't need as much flash output, so you don't have to drop an extra $400 to get x more number of lumens because you don't need it, so you can go with the smaller flash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Good job, Canon. Yeah. Pat on the back.
Just to give you a price update, right now the 600, the flagship one on B&H sells for $469. So what did I say? The other one was $259?
Yeah.
Yeah. So still like there's a $200 price difference between them now.
Awesome.
All right. So there everyone's caught up on their gear.
Did you shoot anything interesting? I bet you did. I bet you shot some Florida stuff.
Tons and tons of stuff that is all super fantastic. I'm sure by the time people are hearing this, I probably will already have a little Facebook album of photos from the vacation. So when I'm back, I'm going to do that first thing so that by the time this podcast airs, you should all check the Two Hosers Facebook and tell me how beautiful my family is and how great my photos are and all those things that people say on Facebook just because.
Yes.
But mine will be good and my kids are beautiful, so you'll be telling the truth. So
yeah. Right. Now give us a little teaser. Do you have an idea of what you took or slash are taking in terms of gear?
I'm going to take the 5D Classic body only, like that body. I'm not going to take the 6D because I don't have to worry about it. And if I...
you don't want to shoot video.
I don't want to shoot video, and I don't want to have to worry about my camera getting stolen or where I put it in either hotel rooms or safes or wherever. I just don't want to have to worry about it, and I'm not going to be paranoid about the 5D Mark I. So I appreciate that. It gives me some peace of mind. I don't want to lose it, but I'm also not going to, it's not going to ruin my vacation if it were to get wrecked or go missing or something.
The one sort of drawback I would find to the Classic is battery life. What are you doing?
Oh, absolutely.
Batteries?
And I have, I think I have about 4 batteries. And so basically I'll take 2 or 3 batteries with me at a time. And when it's done, I should stop shooting anyways, because it makes me a bad father. So
yes.
I that's kind of the way I'm going at it. It's like, all right, if I take 3 batteries out on a day and I exhaust all 3, that's probably each one of them in terms of shooting time will give you maybe, again, if I never turn the camera off and I'm shooting pretty steadily, probably an hour and a half or so of shooting time on one battery. So there's no reason for me to ever exceed that on one day. I'm not being paid to do this. So I'm going to, again, probably shoot sparingly. And therefore, I think the battery situation will be just fine. So I do have a few. And then other than that, I'm going to take the 85mm for sure, because I love that lens. And I can get quite a range of different photos out of that lens, especially if the kids are a little further away and whatnot. I'm going to take probably the 50 mil as well. That those were the two that I was planning to take for sure. And then I'm undecided on whether or not I take either a wide angle or the 70 to 200. Hadn't made up my mind either way on any of those.
I'll make it up for you right now.
Okay.
No to both.
No to both. Just the 50 don't and the 85.
I'll tell you why you don't need them. 70 to 200 is just going to be, you're not going to wish you had 200 on that focal length. Like, oh man, I wish I had 200 mils on this. You don't need it.
Yeah.
Because at 200 mils, your kid might as well be smiling at Stevenson Park versus the Ginormodome in Orlando.
Right.
It really doesn't matter.
The only situation I was thinking of is, you know, when I'm standing kind of away from them and they're up on a ride or something. I thought, you know, 7200, they're riding, you know, the Dumbo's Flying Elephants or mm-hmm. whatever, the Magic Carpets of Aladdin or whatever that ride is where they're up in the air and away, that I thought, okay, the 7200 could come in handy there. But I don't, again, it's not a deal breaker for me. I could still shoot it with the 85 and crop it.
Right. I just can't imagine, I guess you're right, in that respect it'd be nice, but for me, being gone for 2 weeks, how many of those photos do you think that you would, if you took, how many would you keep? How many would you print? How many of those photos would you print? Possibly one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably zero.
I probably have half a dozen to post and probably print one.
Maybe. So are you going to carry the 70 to 200 around for 2 weeks? I mean, I know it'll be in the hotel room or whatever. We won't be physically carrying it, but it's going to be part of your life for 2 weeks for that possible one photo. Is that a good return on your investment?
Yeah, when you put it in those terms, it's probably not.
I wouldn't do it. Worst case, I would just reach over to the guy next to me and say, hey, can I borrow your 70 to 200? Because you know that someone's going to have one there. He's not going to let you use it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for me, I wouldn't, like, for me, it would not be worth that investment. Now, for the wide, what are you going to want to do for a wide angle shot?
Well, I thought, you know, we're going to probably go to some beaches. And again, it's not the kind of photography that I'm good at or even do ever. But mm-hmm. I kind of thought as travel photos, yeah, it'd be neat to have some wide angle shots.
You know what my move there is? Now, I think the exact same thing, but I do not take my wide angle lens because it's the same. I shoot with it so very little, the 70 to 40. F4L I have. I shoot with it's such a specialty lens that I don't use that I would rather take my 50, and if I need a wide shot, I'll bust out the panoramic, shoot the Brennheiser method.
Yeah.
And just quickly do that, and I find that, yeah, for those two wide angle shots, I just save myself the hassle of carrying that.
Right.
So that's the route I would go.
And I mean, again, those are points that swirl around in my head for sure. And then again, I think this is the dilemma that every photographer deals with in kind of going on a trip and what to take, is that you sort of think, well, they don't take up that much space, you know, mm-hmm. like in terms of packing your stuff, like, oh, it's not that. It's not, especially when I think of the 70 to 200 is one thing. It's bigger, it's bulkier, it's heavier. That absolutely. But then I think, you know, the little 19 to 35, like, Japanese knockoff lens that I have is neither heavy nor large nor a worry. If I threw mm-hmm. it off the cruise ship into the water, if maybe someone else did, it would be weird if I threw it off. Again, I wouldn't lose any sleep.
What scenario is someone else throwing it off?
Yeah, I wouldn't lose any sleep over that situation. So right. I'm thinking, like, for that one, like, does it, to have it in there, is it really going to harm me to put it in there?
Okay, so here's the route I would consider. And here's the route I did. When I was at Mountain Equipment Co-op, great store, MEC in Canada, but an outdoor store.
Yeah.
Right? They have a little, I don't know, it's called a climbing bag. I'll send you a photo of it, or I'll send you a link to it, or whatever it is. I think you're supposed to, it's got a little Velcro thing that goes on your belt, and mine happens to be blue with a little drawstring at the top. And I guess maybe you put your crampons in there. Not your crampons, sorry, your, what do you call the little clips that you use when you climb? Crampons are for the ice climbing.
Is it a carabiners?
Carabiner. Maybe you put your carabiners in there. Maybe you put your chalk in there. I don't know what it's for. I saw it and went, that is my new lens bag. Because that, it's not protected, so it's not nothing fancy. I think it costs about $6. It attaches very securely and comes off very easily, a rare combo, and it'll fit a lens. It'll fit. I use it for my prime lenses for when I'm shooting video projects, because I want to always have, you know, if I'm shooting with my 35, I want to have my 85 on hand, but I don't want to have to carry my bag around like when I'm shooting on location.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it goes on. It basically goes on my hip. The lens, and I can switch the lenses in. Now the 85 fits in no problemo. 35 fits in pretty much like secure enough that I have no issue. It doesn't go in completely, but 95%.
Okay.
And that's a big lens. The 35 mil cine lens is a big lens. The one I have, the Rokinon one, Wallamex, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So your 50 mil, your 85 mil, and your wide angle zoom.
Yeah.
They will all fit in there.
Yeah.
So now you can carry, you can probably, and a battery too, probably. So you could basically throw your camera, your 50 mil and your 85 mil and the body over your shoulder and just have this thing hanging off your hip if you wanted. And if you don't, it'll fit in your wife's handbag if she's carrying a bag. Like, you don't carry a diaper bag anymore, but
right.
It would fit in there altogether. So that's my tip for you is if you see fit, pick one up at MEC. It's a great investment.
Okay. So now are you on the fence now as to whether I should take the 19 to 35?
That's the one that if you leave in the hotel and never shoot with, you probably isn't going to impact your carry-on luggage too much.
No, it doesn't weigh very much, and it really is small profile in terms of in my camera bag. So it's either do I carry that extra 1 pound of weight or not?
See, for me, the situation comes is you know, I lack discipline sometimes, and so like once you break the seal on, maybe I'll bring that. It's like, well, maybe I could bring this as well. And next thing you know, you got the kitchen sink that you don't need. That can be me sometimes.
Yeah, and myself as well. And I thought I'm also gonna bring one flash. So I'm gonna bring just one of my 430 EX2s and a piece of black foam, because I probably won't do a lot of indoor shooting, but anything I do shoot indoors, it'll be Jack's birthday during the cruise. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna wanna take, you know, a couple of birthday shots of whatever we decide to do on his actual birthday. I'm going to want to have that shot. So if that's indoors, it's a nice thing to have, especially if I'm going to only bring the 5D, which is only really an outdoor, camera as far as, you know, having enough, ISO to work with. It's like an ISO mm-hmm. 800 kind of camera, right?
I don't go that high.
Yeah.
I generally, like, honestly, almost 640 is pretty much as high as I do go higher when I need the shot, but with confidence, 640 is my ceiling.
Yeah, and so that's you kind of need the flash if you're going to bother to shoot anything indoor. And that's the whole gear. So again, I'm kind of torn on the 19 to 35. My guess is that I'm going to probably pack it, because that's kind of the way I am.
Do it.
But it's a good move. I now can say with about 68% confidence that I can leave the 70 to 200 behind.
Oh, I think you're tired than that. You won't need it.
I will definitely second guess myself about 14 times when I'm packing my bag.
Yeah. I just find that, like, that's a lens that I love shooting with. I love having. I hate traveling with, because I don't have... You do have the large top load zoom bag, though, don't you?
Yeah, I have that.
I do not. So for me, it's I don't have a...
But I don't even think I'll bring that.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And thus... The 70 to 200 stays home. Okay, photo challenge.
Okay.
It was simple. Much like my advice for your packing, it was simple was the photo challenge.
Simple, yes.
So you've gone first 2 weeks in a row. Let's me go change it up. I'll go first.
Okay.
You're simple. Blam. Well,
this is definitely simple.
I'm going to walk away from this one.
This.
Bam. Mic drop.
And maybe like a little bit of pyrotechnics going off too.
Oh yeah, there's no question.
This reminds me of the lemon. Were you inspired by the lemon?
No, I hadn't seen the lemon when I shot this.
What if this was a square photo? This kind of would be the, if that mug was yellow and this was a square crop, this would be the lemon.
And if this was outside and my kid playing road hockey with a very short blade,
yeah,
it would remind me of that photo.
Short. We call your kid Short Stick.
Yeah. No, the stick is normal. The blade.
Short blade. Yeah. Not short sling blade. Short blade.
No. Short blade. I think that was the character from Temple of Doom.
So yeah. I like this photo, believe it or not.
I actually like it, believe it or not. There's a reason you like it. I actually like it too. And I had this exactly in mind 5 minutes before we started the show today. No, a little bit earlier than that. I shot this earlier today.
Okay.
Because I actually didn't know what I was going to shoot for Simple, because it was going to be, I wanted to shoot a portrait because I like portraits like yourself. Yeah. That's my kind of default setting. And I found myself once again, wife was at work, kids are at school. What the world doesn't need is another selfie of me.
Right.
And I was like, okay, what can I do? And then it occurred to me, what is more simple than white on white? And that's what I went with. I wanted to go all white, hoping to win an Oscar. And
too soon.
Too late, I think.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think Chris Rock already nailed it.
They covered it.
Done. Anyways, yeah, so this is extremely simple. This is our white tabletop.
Window light.
Yep. Moved it. Just simply pushed the white IKEA sort of glossy table next to the window, where a lot of we have one in our dining room. We kind of have like a sort of like a bay area, like a bay. It's not a bay window.
Not like San Francisco.
No, it's a Hudson's Bay company store right in our lobby.
Okay.
Right in our living room. It's pretty nice. It's handy if you need expensive T-shirts.
Perfect.
It's like a bay window, but it's like three windows, so it's kind of you get like a lot of soft light coming in from all angles.
Gotcha.
It's a south facing, so today there was a nice overcast, hence a nice soft light. If it's hard light coming in, it wouldn't have worked out so well. But today, nice and soft. So I quickly pushed the table over there, purposely picked a white mug. A white mug that my wife doesn't use often, so there's no tea stains in it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure I hit the tea part. It was a tea stains, like that sort of kind of brownish stain that you get in my other mugs. Picked a very clean one. Toyed with the idea of pouring coffee in it and thought, no, I'm going to go 100%. I like the way that the shadow falls inside. Place it down. Place it very purposely in that location. Purposely pointed the handle where I did. Didn't want it to be like on a 90 for some reason. And wanted on a 45.
Mm-hmm.
And then simply stood over top with the 50mm lens. And that was that. Exposed for the white on the camera left of the mug. I exposed that to be one click below +2, and then everything else just fell right into place and didn't have to make any adjustments in post.
Perfect.
One adjustment. That's a lie. One adjustment. I did click on, which I'd rarely do, I did click on and got rid of the vignetting, because I shot this at f2 on the 50mm, and there was some vignetting. And so I...
did the reverse vignette.
Correct. I wanted it sort of clean.
Gotcha.
And it did a really good job, built right in. And so that's that. That's the shot.
Okay. It's simple. I like it.
I think I could sell this.
To a coffee store or...
To a blind person. I'm not going to, you know, it would have to be in a collection. Like if I were to put a collection up in a coffee house or wherever you do this, which I've done in the past, but if I put this one up, I'll bet you I would sell this.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing that artsy people would like, for sure. I like it, and I'm not really that artsy at all, and I like it. I think definitely I looked at it, I'm like, I like that. And again, just I didn't go through my head in terms of why I like it. I just thought, I like it. Simple, done, the end.
It's the simplicity that you like. For me, it's the same thing. The one issue, the reason that I know you poo-poo the idea, you would never buy this because you could duplicate this.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people could duplicate it, but people... well, once they hear your explanation on the podcast, they could...
Our listeners could duplicate it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the dude with the lumberjack beard down at the coffee house and an iPhone 4 not going to duplicate this.
Correct.
Get close, get something reasonable, but it's not like there's so many little minor things that are going on here that I was very conscious of, like the angle like because the coffee mug isn't in the center, you know, I have to be directly over top. I didn't want to see any of the outside of the mug. I wanted to see. Now, I don't know if it's exactly like the I don't know if the bottom of the mug is exactly a concentric circle of the top of the mug. I probably have to do this again in order to make that happen, which is difficult to do if you're going to have the mug off to the side. That's going to happen.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
If you're directly over top, making that a perfect concentric circle, that is much, much more simple.
Right.
And then just to prove my point, I went and shot a version with black coffee in it and hated it, and just that was that. I'm not even going to publish it. You can just imagine in your head what it looks like. It's way, way less of a photo.
Okay.
All right. I need to go take a nap. You finish the show.
Okay. I also did simple.
Now this is the same setup as last week, and you just quick tweak, or is this a different altogether?
This is my wife 5 minutes before I took the clamshell photo.
Mm-hmm.
I like this photo 1,000 times more than
yes.
the clamshell photo. So still no makeup, still she changed her shirt, so that was the only thing, because she wanted the illusion that she cared, I guess, in the two different photos, that she was actually not going to wear the exact same shirt. So different shirt, hair is a little bit crazy, so the hair could have been, you know, could have been brushed slightly a little bit more, but
I don't know. It looks Rachel.
It definitely does look Rachel. She just got her hair cut the day before.
Mm-hmm.
This is simple. So my instinct was to do what you did, which is put her right next to the window and use window light. And so I said she was upstairs, and I said, can you do a photo? And she said, yeah. I said, hurry up, come downstairs, I've got just the right light. And because it was a bit overcast, and she came downstairs, and literally the sun came out from behind the clouds and just blaring through the window. And I said, oh no, this all of a sudden isn't what I wanted. This is a much more difficult lighting situation than the one we just had. So I thought, okay, well, let's stay with simple. And how do I deal with this in a very simple way? Well, I basically threw up my reflector just with the white sort of see-through side right up in front of the window. So I just basically took that giant, whatever it is, 65 centimeter, whatever the big one is, a reflector. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's a see-through kind of zip out of it. Yeah. And I just threw it up and covered the window with it, and then softened that bright sunshine to make it just, again, a nice, soft, flattering light. And then had kind of much closer to the light that I would have had the sun not peaked out. So mm-hmm. So the idea here was it was window light. It was a simple solution to a more tricky window light situation. And then I just kind of, you know, had her tilt her head and took the photo. And again, two or three shots, we played around with the different head tilt and angle.
And you focused this time.
I got the focus right. Again, much easier focus situation, this one versus yes. the one from last week. Again, the camera has to focus in the dark on last week's, and this one was no problem at all. And so this is shot very, very shallow depth of field. All I cared about was her eyes being in focus. And again, simple, outside of the fact that I had to throw up that bit of diffusion.
Still qualifies as simple.
Yeah, it was simple fix too.
Simple. It's adapting to those situations. That's very important. And the EXIF data tells me the 85 mil at f/2.5, and that was no surprise. That's kind of what I figured, that range.
So why again is like, again, comparing it to last week's, which was very unflattering, like the way I lit that. Why do you think, again, because these are taking minutes apart, why is this one so much more flattering? Like what's the difference here?
It's a much good point. Good question. It's the light coming from above on the grid. far away from her last week was the light.
Close. It was very close. Yeah, like maybe still, maybe two feet.
But it's still, but it was above her, right? It wasn't.
Yeah, it was basically straight above her and coming down.
So despite being a soft box, it being gridded, that is going to add a little bit of a little bit of direction to it, at least control. And then if you had you shot with a light with a big soft light underneath, I think it would have softened her features a lot more. This one just naturally softens the features.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's zero Photoshop done here. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. one of the things that I really noticed in the last week's photo is kind of like, you know, the bags under the eyes, right? Like it sort of mm-hmm. highlighted it in a way, in which case, you know, this one doesn't at all. Like it's just, again, if the one thing she was kind of complaining about was like, oh, like my eyes got bags under them, and you know, late night, early wake up, and they're looking like bags, and she's like, you know, that's the one thing she was thinking in her mind when I took the photo. And so the last photo basically brought attention to that, and then mm-hmm. this one, in no way do I really notice that.
I mean, I'm assuming that relatively speaking, this is a much larger source and softer, although you do have a harder shadow in this one.
Yeah.
And
maybe it's the tilt, it's the head tilt. Like the other one was very straight on, which for that lighting situation, because I shot like completely camera eye level and no tilt, straight on, like maybe it was slightly in the pose that I had. But I just thought it was so funny how, and this is the difference that, you know, like if you're paying someone to take your photo, that you're relying that they know how to do this, is that like I took these photos moments apart. One is very flattering to the model. One is absolutely not flattering to the model.
And the important thing, to my takeaway is that the difference is very, very minor. Like the difference on your end, what the changes that you made, relatively speaking, are very, very minor.
Yeah.
And yet they are that important. So a small investment on this gives you a great big return.
And it tells you also just how important posing is. Because, again, I think that given that exact same lighting setup that I did for last time, had I spent a few extra minutes just working on the right pose for that situation, mm-hmm. I probably could have made it look a lot better.
True.
And so again, it's partly on the light and the angle and everything else, and partly it's on matching up your model and their face and their pose to that given lighting situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before we get into so all in all, much better. It turns out keeping it simple, we get better photos. We put a little more effort in last week, both of us. I like both of our photos this week much better than last week's.
Agreed.
Yeah. Before we get into the interview, I did an interview for this week's show. I want to mention something that I forgot to mention last week. It happens.
Okay.
The only downside to clamshell lighting, which we talked about in last episode, is that sometimes you can get some somewhat goofy-looking catch lights in the eyes.
Okay.
Only photographers and the nerdy ones care about that. Your client, most people don't really care. I mean, you'll find. I know you've done this. Have you ever looked and seen a photo or something, you know, online, and you wonder how you shot it, and then so you look to their eyes for reflections. Okay, let's see what's going on. How do they like this?
And then super zoom in on it.
Yeah, I don't go too far. I quick look and go. There's the softbox.
I do that. I super zoom if I'm confused as to what the light source actually is. Like sometimes it's more obvious, but when it isn't, mm-hmm. I'll get into like the pixel peeping and sort of see what is that in the eye. Yeah.
But your average person does not do that.
I hope not.
In terms of goofy looking catch lights, don't worry about it. Clamshell is still awesome.
Okay.
This week's topic, I did an interview when I was in Italy a couple weeks ago. At this point, you're listening now, it's a few weeks ago. Working on the 24-hour war documentary. The camera guy, as you'll hear in the interview, I call him a DOP, which he quickly throws cold water on. The camera guy is a guy named Kevin Brown from London. I worked with him when we shot at Goodwood last year and then again in Italy. And I sat down with him after shooting just to hear his story about, you know, where he started, you know, what, where, how he got to where he is, and sort of the different cameras he's shot with and how important that is. And, well, we bounced around quite a bit. So it was actually a longer interview, and uncharacteristic to this show, I actually cut it down. Hello?
Yeah.
You still there?
Yeah.
normally we do not edit, but this went on a lot longer. We sat in the lobby of the hotel, and here we go. Meet Kevin Brown.
I work out of a studio in Southeast London.
That explains the accent.
Well, it does explain the accent, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting hearing you guys talk, like, speak. If you go on, you give me your best London accent.
Oh, I can't do it. Hello, governor.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like some sort of...
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins, yeah.
Sure.
Hello, darling. All right. Here we go. Here we go, then.
I'm pretty sure Dick Van Dyke was British.
That's it, the Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
You've got to throw it away a bit more.
Yeah. No, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But can you tell the difference between Nate and I? Because Nate's American, I'm Canadian.
I can... But when you try to do a London accent, it's pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You should hear my French. It's excellent.
Do they not speak French in Canada?
In Canada? Not on the West Coast. We're
pretty lax. There's snow in Canada, isn't
there? Not on the West Coast. No, I'm from Vancouver, and it's not mostly rain. But we're pretty lax with the French there.
What's the film like in... What's the filmmaking in Canada?
In Canada, it's a lot... There's a lot of runaway production from America.
Yeah.
Because our dollar is worth nothing. And the tax incentives. You basically make money just by making a movie in Vancouver now.
Because you're from a photographic background, aren't you?
No, I went to film school.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to film school. This isn't about me. My listeners know who I am. No, I went to film school first and then worked all in there... Hobbyist photographer growing up as a kid, and then went to film school to make movies, moved to Germany, language was a problem, and sort of shifted to photography because it was how I could earn a living without speaking the language. Because editing German is tough when you don't speak it. And so, but as I learned more and more, and then more jobs pop up or something like this comes along where I get to, you know, work on English-speaking films in Europe, it's a great opportunity. But back to you. So, you're DOP.
No, I'm not DOP. I'm a filmmaker.
Okay, but DOP is one of the things you do.
Well, I
saw you set up lights today.
Exactly. I blacked my way through that.
Sure.
Well, I'm a lighting cameraman. In some respects.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a DOP. And
is that too pigeonholed?
No, not pigeonholed. I think I'm a bit of an old school background in that a DOP is someone who lives his life with setting the scene with lighting, and I don't do that. I add lighting to my scene. You know, when people come out of college or uni and they go, "Oh, I'm a DOP," I kind of cringe at that because I've got some DOP friends that are DOPs.
Right,
that's what they do. They light film. They like commercials. They light a blank canvas.
You do it all.
I do. I cover lots of stuff. I shoot. I direct. I light a bit.
Sound.
I do sound. I multitask.
You know what the best part about being a photographer is? No sound. Brilliant.
Yeah, no, I've tried that. But it's hard because you've still got to take photos and make them look good. And I'm a bit of that. Because I have to take quite a few photos. No, I mean, the DSLR thing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, I learned so much. I share some camera kit with a my business partner who's a DOP, who's a proper DOP, and we bought some camera kit together. And when the DSLR thing came through, we were like, "Oh, you know, let's get a 5D, let's get some stuff," and we bought some stuff together. I learned so much off of him, And it was great. I learned so much about photography. I learned so much about video, you know, in that instance. And when the Canon 5D thing came through.
That was like, a game changer.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, it's like, how lucky were we to sort of be part of that?
What was the environment at Goodwood?
Well, at Goodwood, we turned up and we filmed in the driver's enclosure, which was a space at the back of a racing track in a marquee, you know, big cloth hanging down. So on this occasion, the day was, you know, the sun was in and out. So as soon as the sun came out, the marquee lit up.
In the tent. We probably called a tent.
Yeah, it was a tent.
It's a translucent white ceiling.
Is that what the Canadians call it?
Probably.
Where
yeah.
is this?
A tent, eh?
A tent, eh?
Yeah, so that was, I mean, that was, I can't. That
so there's
was,
no control over the light, basically.
Right.
You know, we had minimal light, and as soon as the sun came out, you know, the whole place would light up. And then we had a floor that was wooden and supported, and any other time someone stood over that, there was a noise.
Or a bounce. Yeah.
We had Spitfires going past. We had F1 cars driving past. It was absolutely the worst interview situation that I've ever experienced.
Yet the most fun for me. It was the worst, but yet I had a great time.
And I was, you know...
Because I wasn't you.
And, you know... What's tricky in them situations is that you're on your own. You're setting the light, you're setting camera, you're shooting, you're recording sound straight into camera because you've got no sound recordist.
Mm-hmm.
And you're setting up second camera, in which instance it was yourself, but, you know, we're there, we're working together on it. There's a lot going on, and there's... So many variables that are happening live, and it's...
For me, the pressure came from the fact that there's this crew, you know, five guys who flew over from the States for these interviews. And it's like, and we have one shot at this. You got 20 minutes, John Surtees is going to go, and you're done.
Yeah. And in this instance, John Surtees, you know, who's the Superbike champion... And winner of Le Mans, exactly. And
yeah.
you're told just before we turn up, this is what we've come over for. If all the other guys don't matter,
yeah.
And actually, all we need is this interview.
Don't blow it. Yeah.
And we like go cool. What time are we interviewing this guy? And they're like midday. It's okay. Don't worry. We're going to interview this guy at midday. And you're like, and then at 9:30, they're like, John Surtees is here. we gotta go now.
Are
you
ready?
Can you turn over now? And we're like, no.
You shoot with the C300.
Over the last few years, I've shot a lot with the C300, and it seems to be a real workhorse for documentary and broadcast television. Yeah, it's weird. Like even today, using the you know, jumping in on the looking at the 5D option, and you know, today we were shooting two camera, and you were on a 70-200, I was on a 50mm prime, and yeah, I jump over to the 5D and I'll be like, oh god, you know, I'll deal with that. I can't.
I like the look.
No, looks great.
Yeah,
but just like the flexibility,
the ergonomics of it.
Yeah, the ergonomics and they're
terrible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was like, but there was a time where it was really fun to use.
I still love it. Like, it's my primary camera.
Yeah,
and I love using it. But you need to get that muscle memory down. It is clunky to work with. No more clunky than an Arri S or a Bolex or something like that. I find. But it doesn't have quite the flow. It wasn't designed to be a video camera like the C300. But you didn't always shoot with the C300.
No, I mean, I've been brought up predominantly in the video era. I camera assisted for a little while, so And that was on the sort of, you know, Digibeta era, just before we went to HD. Mm-hmm. I had a little stint on film, but essentially the first time I started operating was on the PD-150.
Right.
For BBC shoots, I was sort of, you know, going out assisting, and, you know, it was like this fun...
Everybody in Canada wanted to buy the UK PD-150.
Oh, really? What was that then?
Well, because it was 20. Well, because yours is 25 FPS.
Right.
Ours was 29.97, so 25 was close to 24.
Okay.
So getting the 25 to run in North America, that was a big deal. We all wanted that. Everybody wanted that.
I just remember that being such fun. You know, being held, being handed one of them on a shoot, on a BBC shoot. You know, and going, right, we're going to record sound. You're going to record sound into that camera, but can you get some second camera shots as well? Well, look, there's some Italians walking past with their Italian bags. Look at that. That is literally an Italian bag. We'll keep
it is an
into
Italian bag.
Into the lift.
Yeah. I think it's got the boot down the side. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, but I had a really fortunate time. I got a job when I left college early, basically. At the end of the course, there was a vacancy at Pinewood Studios, and the head of the course said, we suggest you might want to apply for this. There's things come up. You might be suitable for it. I worked for Ragdoll Productions, who were children's television. Do you know what? That time was so invaluable for me. I always think when you look back at the key moments in your life or your career, if you want to call it a career and sort of like be sort of heavy about it, you kind of go, do you know what? That was a really, really important moment.
So you never actually went to a formal film school?
No, I studied music theatre.
Right. So how do you learn about exposure, about white balance, about...
Off lots of amazing people that are... I surrounded myself with. If you go to film school, what am I going to, you know, okay, I'm going to learn about the technical stuff. Do you know what, actually, you know, I wish I had gone to film school,
mm-hmm.
and really learned them, you know, fundamental steps.
Eh,
but
I went to film school, I don't think that was that wasn't the draw. The draw, that wasn't, for me at the time, when I went to film school, the digital revolution was, like, that was day one. Like, the VX1000 had just come out.
I love that camera.
I beat the crap out of that camera. But even Final Cut Pro hadn't been announced yet. So even then, you had to get, like, the Baby Avid, like MC Express. And to get one of those units was like $25,000.
I've never believed in learning fundamental skills through something, you know, whether it be at school or college. I've never been that sort of person. I've always learned in the field, and for camera, for music, for anything creative, I've always had to learn on the job, and I'm still learning today. And that's one thing that I really, you know, am taken by with this industry, is that, you know, I've shot 1,000 interviews, but yesterday we turn up to film Piero Ferrari, and, you know, in my mind, I've been told that we're going to film him in a certain situation and environment.
Yeah.
And we turn up and we, like, go, well, this is where you're going to film him.
And that was a surprise to me.
And you're going to film him in front of a piece of glass, and there's a bunch of, and there's a factory behind it. And you've got to make it look good.
Yeah.
And I'm like... I do want to sort of jump to my phone and call my DOP friends and go...
What's going on,
dudes,
here?
How do I do this in one easy step? And if they were there, they'd go, what are you doing? You know, why are you putting up that light? And people say, if you were to say to me, and you have done, you're like, where do you want this? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, on two occasions, you've gone, where do you want this light? I'm like, I've got no idea.
What I mean to say is, where do you want this for now?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm putting this down. Where should it go for now?
You know, because we've got, you know, we walk into a place, we've just turned up, we've got 25 minutes, and we've got a setup, and I've got to put up the light, I've got to make sound, and I've got to get everything sorted to a point where we've got to shoot. And it's like, I haven't got time to explain to you how I'm going to do that, and that's not how I work. I mean, what do people want to know?
Everything.
I mean, you know, look.
They want to know why you get to fly to Italy and go interview Ferrari. I mean, who does that?
Well, because it's the best job in the world.
It is the best job.
I mean, how lucky are we to be able to
leave our kids for a day? That's the no.
That's terrible. That's a terrible thing. You know, we yes. do leave our kids for a day, but we.
I hate it.
We come, we travel around the world, and we film stuff, and you know, you're invited into people's lives.
So when you leave here in Maranello,
si.
What are you working on next?
Ciao, Bella.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow, well, we fly back from Italy to London. In 3 days' time, I fly to Barcelona with, is it Messi?
The football? Lionel Messi?
Lionel Messi, yeah. Forgive me because I'm really bad.
Yeah,
At soccer. Names.
Okay, it's Bobby Leonard Doozy.
I think
he's probably the biggest footballer in the world.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
it's not Messi then.
Messi. No, I'm pretty sure it's Messi. I don't know either. I'm not a footballer myself.
Right. Okay.
But no. So you're going to go work with Lionel Messi.
I'm going to work with Lionel Messi.
Okay.
On a 1 day shoot in Barcelona. And it's a charity-based project.
Do me a favor, call him Ronaldo.
But if I get when I get back from that, I'm also filming for a project for the BBC called The Great British Showing Bee.
Called the what?
The Great British Showing Bee.
Okay.
And I'm filming some backstories and VTs for that.
Okay.
And that is, if you've ever seen the Great British Bake Off.
No.
It's basically a similar thing, but everyone sews.
Hey, thanks a lot, Kevin.
It's nice to work with you again. It was good.
And we're back.
Wow.
You did not know any of that, did you?
Were you guys hammered?
He might have been. I don't know. No, I don't want to throw him under the bus.
But I mean,
he's British.
Were you guys?
We sipped some warm ale and played some darts.
Okay, but you guys were you were drinking.
Maybe it might have been some vino.
I didn't even hear the interview, so
we might have had some vino. Okay. I don't know. This was after dinner. This was after dinner, and we sat in the lobby of the hotel.
Okay.
But no, he's an interesting guy to talk to. Just the kind of jobs that you know, like for him, like he's been working nonstop since I met him last September, which is fantastic. But he's run ragged. But he's from one thing to the next. As we talked about in the interview, he shoots with a Canon C300, which if it's not of interest to our listeners, it kind of should be. It's kind of an improved version of a DSLR. It's a more video-driven camera, but it's not far from the 5D Mark II. It's kind of a much better version of it.
Okay.
So there's everything is kind of melding together. Still, it has been for a while, but it's more now than ever. Converging. And he's a really interesting guy and great to work with. I really appreciated working with him. After, you know, once or twice, I was able to sort of get an idea of how he set up because he had tons of equipment, lights and cables and everything like that. And everybody's kind of different in how they organize their stuff. And most guys are very particular about how you wind the cables and what goes in what, you know. So the first couple setups and takedowns, I paid very close attention to how he liked his stuff so that when it came time to break everything down, I could just jump on it. I didn't have to go and ask him about this, ask him about that, and kind of slow him down. He could focus on his stuff. I could start breaking down the other half, and we would just move like that.
Gotcha.
So love working with him. Hope to do so again, especially since he's doing an awful lot of really cool stuff. And he knows everybody. Like his friend, he's telling me about his buddy back home just directed a documentary called Virunga about the apes and Civil War and whatnot. And so he's pretty dialed in with a lot of people who are putting out some great, great stuff.
Okay, there you go. Great.
That's Kevin Brown. Challenge for next week.
I got one. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's going to be Easter.
Oh, come on.
Or will have been Easter. You don't want to do Easter?
Well, again, this already happened, remember, in the whole time-space continuum.
No, I don't think so.
Oh. Oh, I guess I'll have just gotten back.
I don't know. When is Easter? Easter's the end of the month. It's like
yeah, 20... it's right when we get back. Okay, I can do. I'll try, or I'll make something up. I'll say it was on Easter, but really it was a vacation photo.
How about vacation photos? Is the Easter Bunny not going to visit Florida?
Disney World.
Is the Easter Bunny going to visit Florida?
No, we'll be back by then. We're in no man's land there for Easter.
So the kids just get no Easter. Yeah. 2 weeks in Florida, but no Easter.
I'm pretty sure they'll eat their weight in chocolate on the cruise ship, the all-you-can-eat chocolate buffet.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, if you have a better challenge, throw it out. I was doing this. I was trying to throw this right into your wheelhouse.
Okay, I'm going to say it's fine, and I will do something for Easter.
Darn, I didn't want to, but here we go. Okay, websites. Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
Great. My stuff at AlanAtridge.com. The Two of Us, the Two Hosers.com, where you can find out everything you need to know. Links, photos, etc. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.